We have the opening item here is the report from the executive director, and I think the executive director is in the coffee room. Nicole?
Yeah. Thank you. Let me just try to refocus a little bit. That's quite a dissipation of energy. Good morning, everyone. And good morning, everyone listening. All of you staff that are listening. All you LSB members who are listening. Probably our listeners are out having a great Saturday, and hopefully they're listening to our radio stations and not to this. Because that's why they elect you. So this isn't really a report. Consider it that this is my fifth week on the job. And thank you again, all of you, for getting me into this job. So really what it is kind of my assessment, if you will, of this onion that I was handed called Pacifica. And as I continue to peel off the onion, the layers around the onion, to try to find what is its core again, what's really going on around all this, what I call Planet Pacifica. Yes, Doc.
I ask, please,
You know, we pay a lot of money to bring everybody here as a director, including the food. So please, folks, have some respect for the fact that this is listener money, not yours, nothing you have gone out and gotten. It is listener money that brings you here in order to do the business of the foundation and not bog it down in governance. So let's just keep that as an overarching principle. Thank you. All right, so I'm going to try to present to you basically what I presented at the staff meeting in Houston, which is my outside perspective. Because if anything, my framing is I am the consummate inside outsider. I have been in public broadcasting, non-commercial broadcasting, for over 15 years. Started off as a journalist for 4 years, worked major markets, worked minor markets, worked rural stations. I've managed 3, including general manager at KPFA for all of 15 months. actually, I celebrated my 10-year anniversary, my 9-year anniversary, at the end of March, when I was given 2 hours to get my things out by the then executive director of Pacifica. That, supposedly, was the catalyst for the so-called struggle. We'll get more into the struggle later. So I'm first going to give you a macro view of where I believe media is at, and I'll give a disclaimer. The opinions you hear, especially those of you not in the room, are completely mine and are not the opinions of any expert. I'm sure every fact I put on the table could be arm wrestled by different professors and this and that and different people. So this is just my opinion. As being a non-commercial broadcaster for 15 years, which was a second career for me. And I've only worked in nonprofits. So that said, let's get started. I have a couple of teaching tools. And one of them I want to start passing around is this. And this is a book. I happen to have a son, and he is my best, like, what do you say, you know, when you're watching somebody in a laboratory and you're watching them and how they behave. So he's somebody that I really watch and follow. He's 22. He's what I call the millennium generation, meaning they've been born with digital thumbs. So he really teaches me a lot. And he was a skateboarder. And I really like the styling of skateboards. So I went into a skateboard shop recently. And this was right by the cash register. I'm going to pass this around. And I want you to see, look at the aesthetic of this. Look at the look. Look at the feel. This is what young people are looking at, okay? So if we think we hold the whole history and what the peace movement's about and all that in our generation, uh-uh. This is what they're reading. And this is what they publish and put out. So check it out, because we talk a lot about youth, et cetera. Sometimes I think, and I'll talk about this more later, we need the youth to train us. The other teaching tool I have is this. This is an iPhone. This is really what is called a convergence device, all right? For 10 years in broadcasting, we would have forums and conferences and all this stuff about the convergence is coming, the convergence is coming. And everybody was like, what the hell is everybody talking about? The convergence is coming. And basically, especially the tech-minded people would say, oh, well, you know, with broadband, with the internet, what's going to happen is people are going to be able to get this and that, and we're just not going to be in our silos anymore. This, folks, is the convergence device done. If you look at the cover of it, I can hit YouTube, and I'm right on YouTube. I can hit stocks, and I can see all my non-existent stocks because I don't have stocks. I can go to weather. It's beautiful. Weather, and, you know, I can see San Francisco, and I scroll, and Chicago, and Dos Rios, and New York, and Cupertino. This is where all media is going. And it's not going. It's there. It is there, and it will be untethered from AT&T in a year. The Chinese are already making a knockoff. Everybody has one, and let's not say there's a huge chasm or, you know, that certain people can't get it in their pockets. I mean, I go on Mission Street in San Francisco, and I see every new arrival. Maybe not with an iPhone, but in a year it'll be an iPhone. But I see every new arrival.
I want everybody
with a cell phone that connects them to the world. This is mobile media, okay? This is like my kid going, I want to see what the Giants did. Boom. I press a thing, and I've got a 2-minute report on what the Giants did. So the convergence devices are here. We can't argue it anymore. We can't be in denial anymore. It's happening, and it's done. And what, I'll just say one thing about this little convergence device. Great article in Wired magazine about Steve Jobs and how this device came to be. They call it weapon of mass destruction, disruption. And it certainly is. It has disrupted the whole notion of what phones can do. But what's really interesting about it is that it's the second shot that Apple took at doing one of these phones. Because they had this thing called the Roker out there first. And that was what they did with Motorola. And what's really hilarious is that they say, you know, the Roker, it didn't hold more than 100 songs, had no iTunes music store. And it says, design screams, a committee made me. And it failed. Meanwhile, they pull it out of committee, right? They say, adios, Motorola. They go under razor wire, which is typical of Apple, where even the other programmers don't even always know what the other programmers are doing. It is so shut down in secrecy. And there's a reason for that. And what happens is then the iPhone happens. Can hold about 1,500 songs. iTunes Music Store, just tap and go. Come on, look at it, it's gorgeous. Made solely and exclusively by Apple, their designers, and their culture. There's something to that, you guys. There's something to it, especially in the laboratory. Maybe not always out in public or in your notion of what Pacifica is being a media democracy movement. But there's something to that about being able to pull people together and do programming and news that covers our world. So let's go with a brief kind of overview of the history of broadcasting, if you will. I put up here something I want you to think about. To me, this is what Pacifica is. 7 weapons of mass information. 5 stations, 1 collection of voices, which we call the Pacifica Radio Archives, and Pacifica.org, which I call is currently a Where's Waldo experience. Nonetheless, we do have a presence on the internet, minuscule as it may be, but it can certainly expand into a much bigger footprint. So here's really what we are, what we have tangible in our hands. Here's a little offshoot. I had for the all-staff meeting not all staff, but the staff meeting that we had in Houston, I had them come up with Michael Pollan's like seven-word statement kind of thing. All right, well, I came up with my own for you all that I want you to think about this weekend, which is conference call, not too often, on topic, and it follows Michael Pollan's eat food, not too much, mostly plants. One other thing that I wrote up here, just in case you're all wondering, honey, I shrunk the board book, and it's true.
Thank you, Nicole.
And one of the things, and we don't have to go into this now, but I would really like to be able to just send the board book out PDF. And for those who can't do it PDF, you know, we'll print one out for you, okay, and bring it to you. But really, from now on, we're going to send it out PDF. There is just no reason. Last time in New Jersey, we had to bring back 10. That's what was left around. It is a deforestation plan. And I won't go into how much Pacifica is a deforestation plan, because my time is short now. So let's talk about quickly a brief history of broadcasting. So there was this thing called radio, right? It was put together basically through the military and the education folks. And first it was AM band, and then it became the FM band. And it's basically built around spectrum. Spectrum is like this, and it's basically the airwaves and the bandwidth. Recently, they just auctioned off what's called the digital spectrum. And the digital spectrum was bought mostly by about four or five telephone companies. The biggest buy was Verizon, and then AT&T and two other telephone companies. That digital spectrum is going to go live in 2 to 3 years. When it does, the rest of the spectrum decreases in value. Case in point, Clear Channel. Clear Channel amassed, how many? I've got my clipping service here. Clear Channel amassed 1,200 stations when broadcasting was deregulated. They're trying to sell them. They can't get buyers. All right? That's how much it's starting to devalue. So we got this digital spectrum. We've got the FM spectrum. We've got the AM. When Lou Hill came along, who just happens to be the founder of your organization, it was right after World War II. He had just been in a camp for conscientious objectors. And he goes off, and I probably don't have the history right, and I'm sure I'll get slammed on this by any listeners. But, you know, again, this is just my opinion. He goes off, becomes a commercial broadcaster. He realizes, this isn't what I want to do. I don't want to be giving the news and then doing an ad for cat food. This is wrong. There's got to be a different way to use this medium. So he trucks on out to the West Coast. At the time, I think the first station was in Richmond. When he got from the, I don't even know if there was an FCC at that point, but when he got his or the place on the dial, it hadn't been divided up yet as into commercial or non-commercial. It was just there. And when you see the first radio that they gave away, it was called the Subscriber. In fact, when I first took on my job as GM at KPFA, I was absolutely shocked. I go into the office of the GM, and it's kind of a mess. And there's like all this stuff everywhere. And I pull out this box, and it's like this radio. And it says the Subscriber on it. And I'm like, what's this? Because y'all have to realize something about me. I'm not a Pacifica person. I didn't come into Pacifica, you know, as, oh, I was 12 years old and, you know, I never left. No, that wasn't my experience coming into Pacifica. I didn't come into it as a movement. I do my movement stuff in different ways. I came into it as a broadcaster. So I'm looking at this radio. I'm like, what is this? People tell me, oh, that's the first radio that Lou Hill would give away if you became a member. And what the quid pro quo was Hill says, hey, I believe that in lieu of going to the cat food manufacturers to underwrite the programming, I truly believe that people are smart enough and intelligent enough, and I never underestimate the intelligence of my audience, I can tell you that, any station, anytime I'm on air. None of us should underestimate the intelligence of our audience. So he says, I believe that people could actually pay, would actually pay to hear good radio. So that's what I'm going to do. And the quid pro quo is that you pay me and I give you one of these radios. Because people didn't even, there weren't even that many receivers out at the time. So it's called the subscriber. So there were about five other radio stations on the bandwidth when this starts up. One of them, the station that I managed a few years ago, KALW, which was started as a demonstration station in 1939 at the Treasure Island World's Fair in San Francisco. That's how old it is. So we go in there, and he starts this. It starts to take off a little bit. Wow, people are like, this is quite an unusual idea. Now, I heard yesterday somebody said, oh, well, we started public radio. Yes and no. Really, what Lou Hill started was the notion that people will pay to support what they hear. The notion that, unfortunately, it grew into pledge drives, the bane of all non-commercial broadcasting. But the notion that people are smart enough and intelligent enough that they will pay for what they want to hear and support. Fast forward. Fast forward to Lyndon Baines Johnson, of all people. And we fast forward to, he commissions a study, the Carnegie Commission. And he says, you know, it's really gotten intensely commercialized, broadcasting has. So I need a study. So this study happens. So after the study, they say, you know what? The bandwidth is getting so full on the FM dial, we have to reserve some of it. So they reserve the left portion of the dial, right here, called the reserved bandwidth, for NCE, non-commercial educational. And the other people that get to come in here are some religious broadcasters, because after all, they are non-commercial, educational. And then we have all the, what we now call public radio. So it wasn't until the 60s that the bandwidth became reserved, all right? And when that happened, CPB was formed, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And that was supposed to be kind of this middleman of taking taxpayer money, which is part of Congress. Every year, Congress forward funds CPB by 2 years in order to support this reserved bandwidth. Oddly enough, we've got two stations still in this commercial bandwidth, KPFA and WBAI. One of the things I've noticed, a little light bulb went off in my head, because I was reading The New Yorker. I tend to read everything with New York in the title. I don't know why, but I do. So I was reading The New Yorker, and there's so many generations now that have come through around public radio and that have been raised on NPR that I read this whole article, and embedded in the article was somebody that said, oh, yeah, and you know, whenever I get into such and such a city, I just go to the left end of the dial. And that made me realize what a tough position, extra tough position KPFA and WBAI are in. Because they're in the middle of this commercial bandwidth. And if I was a stranger and I go to New York and I'm thinking I want to hear public radio and I turn it on, I'm only going to be looking at that left end of the dial. I may never get to where BAI and KPFA is. So it's very interesting, the extra challenge that they have. So right now, if you take a snapshot of radio, the smart people aren't thinking of themselves as radio anymore. And they haven't been doing that for 5-10 years. It's very well colonized. This is the spectrum that's really going to be let go. Like I said, when this spectrum goes live in 3 years, we don't even know the applications that are going to happen. We don't know what the brilliant digital thumb people are going to come up with for the application of the digital spectrum. Really don't. We don't know what kind of convergence device it may be. Maybe an implant at that point. But what we know is it's going to go live and it's going to have a big impact. And radio will not be what it is today. So from that, let's talk about how does Pacifica fit in a media environment now where something like the Huffington Post, my friends, and here we have it, the Huffington Post, all right, just made out of nothing but zeros and ones, okay, by Arianna Huffington. Granted, she got startup money. Granted, she had a name. granted it's Los Angeles, is now valuated at $200 million? That's the valuation of the Huffington Post. $200 million. Bunch of zeros and ones, an online web presence started, what, 2 or 3 years ago? How many unique page view hits a month? Millions. Millions. She'll sell that, she'll get $200 million, the rest is history. What does that mean about the value of this, and who is our audience now? So that's just one tiny segment, tiny, of the current media universe. Look at all of you with your laptops. Everybody comes in with their laptops. Everybody diving into the box. You know, that's an indication. These are media. This is media. It's not some disjointed thing. It's an indication of where it all is and how powerful all this stuff is. And this is part of the competition that we're living in. The other thing we have to consider is this. The notion of listener supported has become so diluted. It's not your brand anymore. Every community radio station and public radio station says the same thing. We're listener supported. When a huge monster radio station in San Francisco called KQED that has a budget of, what, $58 to $68 million? Granted, it's a dual licensee. It has both radio and television. When they say, we're community supported, what exactly does that mean? Okay? Because it certainly dilutes your standing. What does it mean when every single, you know, tiny little station is saying the same thing? Completely diluted as far as I'm concerned. It means nothing. It's kind of like a brand that means, okay, they go on the air, they pledge, I'm supposed to pledge, maybe some retail comes with it. That's basically what it means. It just means that they're non-commercial. Christian broadcasters, religious broadcasters now do pledge drives. You ever hear them? Please pledge, you know, become a member of such and such a station. So we can't even stand behind our old branding anymore. Because it's diluted. It doesn't mean anything anymore to say, we're listener supported, we're the community, we're that. I don't use the C word. And I think we have to ratchet down our arrogance a little bit in Pacifica about using the C word a lot. In fact, I would say overall, all Pacifica, including the people, maybe most importantly, the people at our stations, need to ratchet down the arrogance. Get a little humble. Get a little humble about what we're doing and who we are. You know, who you heard, when I was running KALW and the war broke, Pacifica wasn't doing great coverage. I put on the BBC. And I heard it from the people in the streets, 250,000 people in the streets of San Francisco. And I would get calls going, well, we don't know who you are, but golly, this is the best coverage I'm hearing about the war. Nobody else is doing it. NPR is like, rah, 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 and nobody else is out there. There are no progressive voices. BBC is progressive. Why was the BBC good? Because they had not shut down their international bureaus. They actually have intelligent people reporting that have a historical context, people that speak the language in Afghanistan, people that speak the language in Iraq, that could then frame it for you in some kind of context rather than just always the American context. And here's an article about the BBC that's quite interesting. This is, again, from Rupert Murdoch's WSJ, Wall Street Journal. Anti-B bets on the web to build a global empire. They have completely morphed into an internet presence. All of it. They're doing things with Apple. They're doing things with... It's not about TV, Mr. Thompson said in an interview. It's about content and ways of getting content to people. And that's where they put a lot of their efforts now. So we are in a huge, very vast, highly competitive media market where guess who is in the driver's seat? Not you anymore. Not your programmers. The person, the individual is in the driver's seat because there's so many different ways to get it. Okay, let's fast forward to Pacifica. So I talk a lot about Planet Pacifica because I felt that when y'all hired me, the reason you hired me, I felt, was make it sustainable, because it's not sustainable now. We can keep going a little while longer, but it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable financially. It's not sustainable with regard to listeners. It's not sustainable programmatically. So therefore, because I'm an eco-head kind of warrior person, I look at it as an ecosphere, a biosphere, if you will. And I say, well, we're not grassroots. We're too old for that. This is an almost 60-year-old institution. Grassroots aren't 60-year-old institutions. But we're like an oak. So let's pretend we're talking about a big oak tree. And when people talk about oak trees, oftentimes there's a saying that says, as above, so below. Meaning that the oak tree that you see, as big as it is, also is that beneath the ground in its roots. That's real roots. And those roots give growth to the grass under the oak. And the oak shades the grass from burning up, but eventually grass, it's cyclical, right? Grass comes in the spring, turns brown in the fall, in the summer, and it dies. But it's resurgent. It's always coming every year. The oak stands. The oak drops acorns here and there. Maybe some take into other oak trees. But oak trees are now susceptible to what's called sudden oak death syndrome, especially up in Northern California. Marin County, Sonoma County, Mendocino County. They can just die like that. Because that's how wild our ecosystem is getting. And that same ecosystem applies to media as well. So I see Pacifica as this massive oak with these five incredible stations and this collection of voices of every voice of dissent that has been in this nation for, what, the last almost 60 years, and global voices as well. And I'm like, well, okay, I look at the audience. An incredible decline in audience. In some markets, there's a reason. In other markets, I'm not quite sure what. And I wonder about this thing called New Pacifica. Because, like I said, I just celebrated my, what, 9-year anniversary. And this is what I went out on, you guys. This is what, a week before I was fired, an artist named Rupert Garcia had done this for our 50th anniversary. And this is what, I had brought Rupert back in. I had brought people that had given to the capital campaign of KPFA back in, who had been completely estranged from the station in Pacifica. And I said, hey, we're going to be 50. And I need a tool that I can then sell. So Rupert Garcia, a very well-known artist, made 250 copies, signed them. My plan for bringing in a group was that each one would be sold at, I think it was $2,500 or $5,000. This is what we did. I'm going to give this one to KPFT, actually. When I was fired, I don't know what happened to them. This is the only one I took. But it's quite beautiful. It's really beautiful. And it said, we shrunk, honey, we shrunk the mission. And it says on it, 50th anniversary, KPFA Pacifica Radio, 1949 to 1999, to promote peace and justice, encourage cultural diversity, promote freedom of the press, maintain independent funding. Pretty nice bullet points for a media organization, huh? This is 9 years ago, you guys. We don't have to keep reinventing the wheel here. I don't know what happened to the signed ones. And I know that probably people would love to have other people on it, you know, too, representing. But this is what we did at the time. And it's really beautiful. And it's really significant of where we were. But you know what? A lot of these faces don't mean anything to anybody 30 and younger. Why do I go to our websites and I don't even see the word Pacifica on some of our websites? How come the stations don't brand with the, each one has a different, you know, well, we're this, or we're that, or we're this, or we have faces on some of the websites, as though these faces are some kind of, as if everybody in the world knows who these faces are. They don't. It's inside, inside, inside. And that's where I currently see Pacifica, as this kind of inside, 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 inside. And if you're not inside, you know, if you're not just totally passionate about this incredible governance situation we're in, well, then you must not be for media justice. You know, you must not be for media democracy. Because isn't this where it's happening? You know, tell that to an Iraqi. Tell that to somebody in a FEMA trailer in Louisiana. You know, they're going to have a real different point of view about your reach, about what you do, and about the bubble. So we have to change or not. We can continue to be a museum. And, you know, I say we're caught in amber. I don't mean an amber alert. I mean amber like, you know, what bugs get caught in. And then many years later, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, they're just still caught. I live in community in San Francisco. I live in a place called Project Artaud, which was started in 1971. And it's a bit stuck in amber sometimes as well. It's a democracy. We have no sexually transmitted viruses or what you call STVs, single transferable vote. You know, it's like majority rules in our community. And yes, we vote on which light bulb to screw in. And sometimes that takes, oh my goodness, you know, 6 board meetings to decide which light bulb are we going to screw in. But at least when we vote, it's majority vote. None of this odd kind of convoluted stuff. I mean, even to the outsider, people can't decipher what Pacifica governance is about. And much less to the inside. Even insiders don't get it, much less outsiders. So I'm not going to go on too long about the governance. Here's my assessment. When I was working at KPFA, it was not perfect. We had 2 board meetings a year. You know what the line item in the budget was taken out of each station for board meetings? $10,000. That's it. Each station paid $10,000. And even then I complained and said, that's too much. 2 board meetings a year, pretty lean and mean, small national staff, small national office, but efficient. Got things done. Capital campaigns, leases, all kinds of things. Moved stations. You know, but ratcheted down and lean and mean. And yeah, Pacifica is all, you know, even then, 9 years ago, there was take back Pacifica because, oh my goodness, program changes happened. How do you expect these stations to stay relevant when every time a program is changed, it's political? How do you expect these stations to stay relevant when the way they, all their decisions are done, are fueled by the internal politics? Oh, I better please so-and-so and get them on my side, so I'm going to give them a contract. You know, oh, I better please such and such on my side, so I'm going to give them a show. And then when they don't get a show, those people, oh, then, no media justice. No media justice. How do you expect? These people aren't brilliant. Of course not. It's a hard job, underpaid, to be a manager or a PD. You know, it's a really tough job, but it's so politicized. Not just by the staff, but by the governance as well. So politicized, they are scared to move. Which way to go? I had an incredible meeting with staff here in Houston. And I want to thank Dan Siegel, who is interim ED. He pulled together that staff meeting. I didn't even know what was going on. It was my first week. I was like, oh, I'm not only running, you know, I'm like racing now. Okay, let's do a staff meeting. Why not? And it turned out to be amazing. I worked them hard. We didn't have a lot of breaks. And these people came together and they were like, wow, I'm looking at you and I never get to look at you in real time. Well, I'm talking to you and I never get to talk to you in real time. And you're my colleague. Why has all this dominated rather than bringing together staff? Why? I don't get that. But productive it was. It was so productive, and everybody came out energized like crazy. We have a little baby plan for convention coverage, and I can talk about that later if we have the time in this meeting. And it's the very beginning to bring us back to basics. And those basics are our five stations, our collection, and an internet site, a web presence that is too small for comfort in 2008, that doesn't know what it is, who it's supposed to be pleasing. One of the things I said to, and I want you all to meet, and I'm sorry, Dominga, I didn't do this at the beginning. Dominga Estrada, our HR director. You know, I had to get it into my... I had to get it into my agreement to hire an HR director. But I did it. Because that is key. That's a key position in bringing some sense to what is really so flat of a network, it's concave. And in that concaveness is this muddy, muddy, muddiness. And nobody knows. Everybody's scared to make a decision. I'm going to get sued. I'm going to get, you know, take back. I'm going to get indie media on my, you know, what have you. And there goes my name on Google. Fine. I don't even Google my name anymore, especially not since I've been with Pacifica. It's not even funny. If these people think they're doing journalism, I got some other thing for them. I mean, this is not journalism, people. Send yourself to Baghdad. Send yourself to Beirut. Send yourself to Brazil. Send yourself to Thailand. You know, the only country that's still exporting rice. Why? Because all the other rice exporting countries have stopped exporting. Why? Because there's a shortage of rice. There's food famines going on. They're rioting in the streets over rice, one of the most essential grains on the planet. Are we reporting on it? Is indie media reporting on it?
No, they're reporting on you.
Right. It's all vanity, 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 vanity. And our community is more important than anybody else's. That's why I don't use the C word. Because my community has not necessarily been well covered. And my community is not necessarily your community. I work for the public. If I'm in public broadcasting, I work for the public. So who are you? What is Pacifica? Pacifica has five licenses. Five. It's a hybrid. Okay? The foundation is the holder of those licenses. That's what gives you legitimacy. That's what you are stewards of. You are not stewards of the politics on Capitol Hill. You are not stewards of the politics in your community. As a Pacifica director, you are stewards of these five licenses regulated by the FCC, a little bit by CPB, by the IRS, by OSHA, by collective bargaining agreements, and by all the motions in the world. And I don't mean to be flip, but there's a bit of motion sickness going on. Come on, don't bog us down in all this stuff. It becomes dust and obfuscation to getting to the real work. You know, you guys are really brilliant strategists. I wish you'd use it against the government. I wish you'd use it better against the Bush regime, because you are brilliant strategists. You really know how to, like, take the conversation and take it this way, and then take it this way, and then get everybody upset that, oh my God, I might be doing the wrong policy. You know, put that on Karl Rove. Where have you been the last 7 years? Could have used that. Could have used that. So as stewards of this public trust that has never once taken a commercial penny, never taken corporate underwriting, never taken business underwriting, if you have a bully pulpit to stand on, that's it. That is so it. And guess what resonates with
Nicole, he's fixing your battery. Oh, okay.
That resonates with young people. My son and his generation understands no logo, no corporate. They get that so freaking clear.
And if anything Pacifica has a leg to stand on, it is that. Just like Amy does, who we birthed. We birthed Democracy Now. Amy comes from us. We birthed her. We gave her the room to grow. And I am so proud of what she has done. But she stands on that bully pulpit. And that's what gives her validity. Not to mention, you know, her fabulous skills at interviewing and the incredible Rolodex and everything. But what do you think gives her so much standing? Bingo. That she's not beholden to Walmart, she's not beholden to such and such a foundation, she's not beholden to anybody. But what do we get? Do you know what's kept Pacifica alive in the bigger world? 2 seconds from Pacifica. This is Democracy Now. In the bigger world, that's what's kept you guys visible and alive. Those small little words. And I hate to be the cold shower, you guys, but I feel I have to be. From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now. And that standing just resonates, and it goes like this, all through the world. Let me tell you something about Amy. Amy acts as the assignment editor for every little community radio station and public radio. I mean, it's kind of amazing. I listen to two of them up north in California. And if you hear it on Democracy Now!, you know one of their local programmers will be doing it 3 days later. So she ought to get extra money for being the assignment editor for all of, you know, like, so-called community radio. Because it's quite fascinating that actually that's her power as well. So we've got, all right, let's talk about, so I do this Houston meeting, right? And coming right out of the Houston meeting, we're about to do Winter Soldier. And part of who Dan had invited the web person from KPFA, Michael Manicuri. And Michael had started WarComesHome.org. And Dan brought him because Dan got it, that War Comes Home, something was going on with WarComesHome.org. What was interesting about it? Well, Michael did a great debrief, and I'm going to read you some of his notes from the staff meeting. Launched in September 2007, wanted to use bright blue green KPFA.org site template that KPFA is using to differentiate itself from KQED and others. According to Michael, identity equals efficiency. Have to understand, there's new ways of thinking. People don't absorb media like we used to. Once you have an identity, you can turn it over into new graphics, banners, newsletters, etc. very fast. Kick out the logo into various documents very quickly. Next, we came up with a design that looks okay. We weren't embarrassed to promote it. It was okay enough to show people. Passes the blink test. In the web lexicon, it's called the blink test. Will it pass? We did lots of cross-promotion, got a little bit of press. When posted to a big site, we'd get spikes of hits, but average day was a dozen or so, 100 a day. Also, and remember this, you don't just take radio and put it on the web. That's not what it's about. Also, audio clips were shorter, web length, 3 to 5 minutes. Make it embeddable, little Facebook apps, etc. Not huge, but little bits of outreach add up. Since October, total unique page views are about 47,000. Not a lot of people commenting, probably not enough traffic to sustain that level of community. Should have planned better. Mixed identity between a blog and a podcast. Also, it was somewhat difficult to interface with KPFA.org. We also had trouble getting other voices from the station to participate, just not enough people hours. In the future, this is key, must find people who are web producers. Difficulties getting synergy with other shows. Also, there were difficulties getting return visitors. Developed as we went, so putting an exact budget figure on it is a little tough. Not counting Michael's time and station resources, it cost about $4,500 to $5,000. You know what the food costs here, you guys? Yeah, more. For anything on the web to really work, the content needs to be changed daily, and it's expensive. Can't just stick an hour-long show on the web. have to edit it into bite-sized pieces, has to be Google searchable, etc. Also, it takes some effort and learning curve. Problem one, you can make something great on the web, but how do you get them back to you? Problem two, content put on the web has to be of superlative quality, or else people aren't going to come back. What we learned, know exactly what you're doing before you do anything. Who's the target audience? What is the focus? What is the identity of the project? What information are you providing that's unique or educational? What's the sticky value? What makes it worth going to the radio station site rather than some other site? There is a science to making people come and go. All right, so fast forward. We start talking about Winter Soldier at the staff meeting. These guys are on. John, our wonderful tech director, who is in Houston, lugs all the equipment to Houston. Because from Houston, he's going back to Silver Spring, Maryland, where Winter Soldier's going to be. And he tells me, Nicole, I'm a warrior. I'm going to be there. I got to test the lines 2 days early. I'm like, thank God we've got a warrior in the house. Thank God we've got a warrior in the house. Rather than somebody that's just concerned about me. Oh, how am I going to be? It's all about me. It's not about vanity radio. So then Winter Soldier happens. Oddly enough, all five stations don't carry it. We won't go there. We don't need to go there. I've already had a conference call with all of them, and I say to them, the PDs and GMs, and I say, you tell me what the litmus test is for a must carry. You tell me at what point. I did. And I said, if anything passes that test for a must carry, it was Winter Frickin' Soldier. And there are no excuses. No excuses. I want to read to you just some of the stats about then what happened with Winter Soldier Online. Check this out. Because then I asked Michael, I say, so Michael, what happened online? Because we had warcomeshome.org as well. Now mind you, I had to pull the chain in order to get Winter Soldier on Pacifica.org, even. War. Not okay. Should have been WarComesHome.org. You can hit Iraq Veterans Against the War on WarComesHome.org. What is all this internal competition going on in Pacifica? It's rife with it. Not only do you compete at the stations with each other, we're competing station to station. It's like, whoa, I walk in and talk about balkanized. It's weird. It's like this competition. I don't get it. And there's always been this weird competition between BAI and KPFA. Get over it. You have so much to share and teach each other. I mean, okay, so let's listen to some stats on Winter Soldier. Pre-Winter Soldier broadcast. WarComesHome.org had 23,000 unique visitors, 75,000 page views. Average page views per visit time. Oh, average page views was 2.76. Average time on the site, 2 minutes 51 seconds. Almost as much time as your TSL on the radio stations. Okay? Well, a little smaller. A lot smaller. Winter Soldier broadcast and after. Okay, this is an after. So this is through March 14th through March 16th. 20,000 unique visitors. 67% of those had never been to the site before. 98,000 page views. Average page views per visit, 3.5. Average time on the site, 4 minutes 45 seconds. For comparison, KPFA.org had 378,000 page views from 51,000 unique visitors in March. Interesting where the geographic locations were. Alameda County, San Francisco, New York, Brooklyn, Oakland, Portland, San Leandro, Washington, Chicago, Seattle, Austin, Houston, Los Angeles, Piedmont, West Hollywood, London, Denver, Minneapolis, Beverly Hills, Berkeley, Monterey Park, Bell Gardens, San Lorenzo, Arlington, Fresno, Castro Valley, Philadelphia, Vancouver, Dallas, Pittsburgh, Hayward, Sydney, Atlanta, Albuquerque, Sacramento, Madison. On and on it goes. This is where people were coming from. How they heard it is all different ways. Oddly enough, then Michael does this, which is really interesting. He does some kind of program where then you see the words that are like the most used. Here, I'll start to pass this around. It's really fascinating for the month. It's very interesting where KPFA, so then he says, well, where are the sources of the referring sites? Michio Kaku is one of the top five. This is to get to kpfa.org. This is the referring, how you get to their site. WarComesHome.org, Iraq Veterans Against the War, Wikipedia, Against the Grain, Ad Hour, Google, StumbleUpon, Dig, Run Once, WBAI, 911 Blogger, Dave E.D., Democracy Now!, Radio Locator, Bookwaves, Mail Google, Bay Wide Web, Flashpoints, Cloud Surfing, Stop the Spray, Peace and Freedom. This is all the places where it's getting referenced, okay? And this is the kind of end wrap, if you will, of WarComesHome.org. So then Michael sends me, he says, don't you think this is interesting? He sends it to his team. This is about finding political news online. The young pass it on. It was from the New York Times. And it discusses the article. It's from a blog of Matthew Ingram. Jane Buckingham of the Intelligence Group, a market research company, says that during a focus group, one of the subjects, a college student, said to her, if the news is that important, it will find me. Matthew Ingram writes, it's not that there is anything earth-shatteringly new in this, mind you, but I think it does a great job of describing how digital word of mouth, in other words, social networking of all kinds, including Twitter, IM, Facebook, and so on, has become a dominant means of news delivery for young people in a way that I'm sure old geezers like myself can't quite grasp, no matter how often people describe it. The only reason I've been able to grasp it is because I have a 22-year-old, and I've been watching his media habits for the last 10 years, and it is all peer-to-peer. And I know there's enough of you in this room, Bonnie Simmons, for example, who can talk about the impact on the music industry with regard to all this. It's been great for independents, though, and that's who we ought to be focusing on with our music. Is new music and the independents and the local stuff. But you know what? A lot of other radio stations are already doing that. So that we may have missed that as well. So where do we go from here, you guys? We've got a situation with the bylaws that Rupert Murdoch would love. We have so taken down the firewalls between governance and day-to-day. We have so taken down the firewalls between governance and the stations. And everybody's role is murky. And everybody can claim standing. So in the end, who has standing? You know, Murdoch would love this. This is what he's accused of doing, right? You know, are they supposed to program for you guys? Are they supposed to program for their LSBs? Who are they programming for? The union, the collective bargaining agreement? Is that what they're supposed to be programming for? A cradle-to-grave situation? You know, in a nonprofit? I'm a union member. I don't like the dilution. Collective bargaining agreements are about benefits, working conditions, pay. They're guardians against rapacious greed. And bad working conditions. It's murky. It's muddy. So we have no clear voice. Quickly, let's go to the audience numbers. I put in here, in your board book, a confidential thing. Because audience numbers, believe it or not, are proprietary. People pay for it. They're just not supposed to go out there. Confidential. Okay, each station, I'm only using... I only use the NPR stations in your markets. And the reason why is that Non-commercial radio does not contract directly with Arbitron, okay? Let me repeat that. Non-commercial radio does not contract directly with Arbitron. Radio Research Consortium is our contractor between Arbitron and us. Radio Research Consortium then takes those numbers, gobbles them up, spews them out. CPB uses those numbers directly for your grants. And we use them for audience planning. Now, just look at these. Unfortunately, you know, they're not all NPR member stations. Like, I don't think WFUV is an NPR member station, but it could be. So the first one, WBAI. You know, there's the cume. Then look at the cume of NYC. Then look at the cume of even WFUV, nearly all folk music. Look at the AQH, average quarter hour of listening. Look at the TSL, time spent listening. Los Angeles. Now, Los Angeles is really in a unique situation. Do you know that Los Angeles is grandfathered in with the amount of power that it has? No other radio station in the United States is allowed to have 110,000 watts of power. 100,000 is the cap. It's the cap. But they grandfathered in K to 110,000 watts of power. Oh, la, la. Okay, KPFK, look at the cume. Then look at KPCC and look at KCRW. Look at KPFA. And I'm really going to dig the knife here because I want you to go to KALW. And I want you to know that KALW broadcasts on 1,800 watts. That might as well be considered low power. 1,800 watts compared to what? KPFA's 58,000? Along with Fresno and everything else?
Do you know what MPATC is?
For format?
Is that just a format thing?
Yeah, it's a format thing. And look at KALW. Look at the AQH compared to KPFA. Look at the time spent listening. Look at the cume. Houston, another 100,000 water. WPFW, incredible market. You've got every politico in the planet living there. You got lots of NGOs, lots of progressives as much as Republicans. Not everybody's a Republican in Washington. You know, there's people making the good fight in Washington, D.C. I was just there at Take Back America. It's where I met up with AC. He was there too. You know, there's a lot of crossover going on right now in the new progressive political circles. When you say AC, he's nodding his head. Yes, he's agreeing with me. A lot of crossover. Not just demographic crossover, but class crossover as well, all kinds of media crossover. So, you know, let's not think that the rest of the world is stuck in amber, because it's not. I can tell you about blog sites that get a million unique visitors. Here's a quote by Crooks and Liars, who they were the ones that gave me my credential to go to Take Back America. Crooks and Liars, one of the ugliest blogs on the blogosphere, but I love John Amato. And when he passed his 115 millionth unique visitor, this is what he said. And I want to say that anyone can start their own blog, do research, make phone calls, or just send tips and participate in helping this country when America needs you most. We are rocking the world of information. When Talking Points Memo gets a George Polk Award, all right, yet again, just somebody's dream, I'm going to do Talking Points Memo, I pull it together, it's a bunch of zeros and ones, we make it a blog site. And what did they do with Alberto Gonzalez? When we were going through everything with Alberto Gonzalez, they were able to take those papers and they did what was called a data dump. And they dumped all the papers onto their site. And then they asked every legal eagle in the country to pick a paragraph or something and go through all the papers and try to find what was obfuscated. And that, it was so exciting. I went to TPM then. I mean, I'm not a legal eagle, but it was incredible, the little facts they were pulling out, pulling out, pulling out. So that then, Talking Points Memo, a blog site, guys, I mean, I don't even call it a blog anymore, could build this case around Alberto Gonzalez that then was of use to the prosecutors, then was of use to congressional people, then was of use to citizens like me or non-citizens who are engaged and active and like, that's what's with this, you know, DOJ. They got a Polk Award for that. That's how recognized they are. We didn't give them a Polk Award, but the rest of the world did. You know, Fire Dog Lake doesn't like the way AP reports on Obama. What do they have together? They have a rapid response team together. If you're part of Fire Dog Lake and you sign up for their rapid response team. So when AP did their smear on Obama on one of the stories, within a morning, the rapid response team of Fire Dog Lake had sent out 14,000 emails to AP. Do you know what that does in a news organization when you suddenly in one morning receive, like, in 3 hours, 14,000 emails? You know, they lock up. Guess we did something wrong. How come we don't have rapid response teams? How come? Humble it down, folks. If you ratchet it down a little bit, we're going to be able to make some change. If you ratchet down this whole governance thing, we're going to be able to make some change. But you cannot allow Pacifica to continue to be dominated by this huge bureaucracy that has come out of these bylaws. You cannot allow that. You can't allow me to do it. You can't game it, guys. Game yourselves. You know, conference call, not too often, on topic. Don't use it as a way to game everything. Because now I'm starting to learn how the game's played. Oh, we'll go into executive session to really dump on things. Oh, well, let's wait and we'll put motions at the end and then we'll extend. And then, of course, staff like Lonnie and I, who have been working already a 10-hour day, have to give another 4 hours because nobody's going to hang up because that's when the deal goes down at the end. Transparent. Got that in five weeks. That's not governance, you guys. That's just not governance. And it comes with a cost, a hard financial cost that was never projected. How come? How come when you wrote up all these bylaws and everything, you never projected the financial cost? Think of the credibility cost when you can't execute a decent election. I mean, think of the credibility cost. You may be at war and think it's the most important thing in the world, but your listeners are like, well, that's the last time I vote. They can't even execute the election. And I don't blame them. I had the publisher of Mother Jones telling me, you know, Nicole, I get these. I'm a member of KPFA, and I get these ballots and everything. I don't know who to vote for. I mean, I don't know. What should I do? I'm like, don't ask me. Medea Benjamin, Global Exchange, saw her at Take Back. She's like, I'm staying away. Do what you can, Nicole, but I'm staying away. I'm like, thanks, Medea. Thought you were my friend.